Hello everyone, Future Mareike checking in with you because I just wanted to warn you that this is a part 2 in case you have not seen it in the title. This is the second part of my collaboration with Jordan from the Books to Last podcast, and in the last episode we left you off with her talking about the last books that she read throughout the year, which were Six of Crows and the second book in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, and she elaborated a bit how she struggled with reading in 2021 because of her working from home. She did not have her reading time on the train, which I also personally experienced, and yeah, it definitely cut down on her being able to read quite a lot. So this is where we left off. Now I will let you listen to the second and last part of our collaboration. I hope you have fun. Bye bye. That sounds like a pretty good start into the year. Because for everyone who does not use Goodreads, it's this app, or you can also access over any browser on the planet, and you set the goal and it also tells you how many books you are behind, whether you're on track or how many books you are ahead. And when you are falling behind for whatever reason, there's always pressure because you're like, oh no, my Goodreads goal. And usually what happens is that when you are somewhat close, but you know, okay, if I read, I don't know, 5 books the size of It or Ken Follett or I don't know, whatever, any big book, I will probably not meet my goal until the end of year. So in November, December, that's usually the big time of graphic novels and manga and everything to boost your Goodreads goal. And yeah, like for me, I said I wanted to read 55 books. And right now I'm over 30 already, including graphic novels. So this year, one other thing that I wanted to do is that I wanted to get more into graphic novels, not necessarily manga, but also graphic novels from other countries. And this was really a nice experience because I also, because for me, usually the thing is because I've got so much limited space, I can't have too many graphic novels or too many manga books in here. I've got a few ones selected from like my most favorite series, but I don't have that much shelf space to just put them on there. So I usually tend to read them on my e-reader because my e-reader is in full color. And they've got this very nice, yeah, programming sort of that, yeah. If you really want to zoom in, you just click on the panel and then it zooms in and you can see the details of the drawing style and everything. So this is actually very nice.
Yeah, it's I think it's Comixology's formatting, especially on Kindle. It's also really excellent because I sometimes struggle with some graphic novels. It's not obvious what order you're supposed to do
it. Oh, yeah.
In. So if you double tap just onto the panel, you can read it. And if it's a big panel, it'll zoom into the speech bubbles. And you can just swipe as if you're swiping to the next page. And it will just take you to the next one that's supposed to come next. And I find it's a much more immersive way as well, because when I'm reading a graphic novel, sometimes I'll scan the entire page, which is fine when you're reading like a regular prose novel, because nothing, you know, you can't read that fast. Nothing really gives it away. Although I have accidentally read like the last sentence of a chapter and been spoiled like one page before I get there. But that's like the worst it can get. Whereas with a graphic novel, things can change so drastically from one page to another. I don't like being able to see the whole thing. So it is really good. Unfortunately, my Kindle Paperwhite is black and white, so it's just not as good. So I think I need to get some kind of e-reader or maybe use my phone app so that I can read them in color, because it seems like you're only getting half the art if you don't get
it's definitely a better experience. Like for mangas, it's probably not that bad because they are not fully colored in usually, but for graphic novels, or they really put the work into coloring it, and so much in graphic novels comes from also the coloring style, I personally think. So I can definitely recommend to also look at it in color. And like generally, so this is something that I did more. I also read from my 3 top authors, I already read at least one book. I think from Murakami and King, I read one each. And then from Brandon Sanderson, I already read 3, but this is not very surprising because I think he's a fantastic author. I think I read his Mistborn series, which for everyone who doesn't know, I don't know, have I talked about Mistborn in detail on the podcast? I'm not sure. I will do so now, at least with a little summary. So we've got this world. It's a fantasy world. And there you have magical abilities when you consume metals. But not everyone can consume those metals. There are some rules and restrictions to the world. But there has been like some sort of rule of an evil king. And there's a rebellion. And they want to like sort of dethrone him. And there's a very strong female main character who gets thrown into all of this, and it's a very fantastic series, and I just love his writing style, so for me it was not a big surprise that I read so much of him already. But yeah, and his I saw you've got him on the shelves. Yeah,
the first two of the Mistborn trilogy. It has been on my list forever because Brandon Sanderson is just one of those authors that just keeps on cropping up, and I really want to read his Skyward series because I think it's a bit sci-fi but also fantasy. And I have this weird I don't know if there's a word for it, but I have this weird feel there's so many books and series that I haven't read yet, but I already know that I'm going to love them. I just haven't had the chance to read them and love them yet. And Brandon Sanderson is definitely one of those. It's like him and Robin Hobb are just such titans in the fantasy genre, and I want to read their series so bad, but there are so many books.
Yeah.
And it's so scary.
I know. And the thing is, because what I love to do is to binge series, so I usually wait until the last book is very close to its release, and then I just read the whole entire thing, because I just love, like, if I love the world, I really like to really get immersed in it. And that's what I did with the first Mistborn trilogy. And then there's a second trilogy, so books 4 to 6.
Yeah.
And a seventh one is coming, but I think when was the last book released? I think it was like two years ago or something, two, maybe three. And at the back of the book, it says, oh, wait for the next novel that is going to come out next year, or that is going to come out after he finishes the third book in his Stormlight Archives series, which is also going to be, I don't know, like 10 books or something. And I remember when I looked it up, I was like, okay, the Stormlight Archives by now have got their fourth book, and we still haven't got the seventh book to the Mistborn series. Okay, I don't know when I'm going to get that seventh book, to be honest. But yeah, it's a fantastic series. Like, even if the seventh book never comes out, the ending at the sixth wraps up enough so that you're not like, oh my god, I'm missing an entire thing. Like with Game of Thrones. I mentioned this on the podcast before. When I read Game of Thrones, the series was in the making and the ending was not finished yet, and it's not finished yet either. But it was so weird for me to suddenly stop, and there were so many loose ends. And this was actually the turning point for me, where I was like, okay, I'm very disappointed that I can't read now. I need to read something else. And then it all snowballed from there.
Yeah. I started the fifth book of Game of Thrones because I read all of those while I was at sixth form. So I read the first four, and then I got like halfway through the last one, so A Dance of Dragons. And then I ended up stopping for whatever reason. And then I was glad that I did, because I knew the next one wasn't out yet. And I knew that was going to irritate me while I waited for it. But George R. R. Martin is still waiting on that next book. And
yeah,
I've got a few like him on my bookshelf. The Scott Lynch has got a series. The Lies of Locke Lamora is the first one.
Yeah.
He's fantastic, but he's been pulling a bit of a George R. R. Martin with the fourth book. But sometime last year, we got a photo of the front of a manuscript being sent off to the editors. Whatever that means, we'll find out. I have had a pre-order for that book for about 4 years because I've been able to pre-order it through Waterstones, and they just keep pushing the release date back. So I've been pre-ordering that book for a while. I'm just waiting for it. Maybe we'll get it one day on the same day that we get the sixth Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Another series for me that I always have on my TBR, technically, I also have it on my TBR for 2021. Mm-hmm. But because I love to binge series and I don't want to wait, I don't know, a decade for the next book, like The Name of the Wind series. Yes, like it's supposed to be a trilogy, but there are just two books out. And I think the second one was published nearly a decade ago. I purchased the 10th anniversary of the first book, the edition, I think 3 years ago. So it's been probably a decade and the third book is still not out. And every time I speak with someone or I hear a video and they're always like, it's such a fantastic book. It's so fantastic, but it's not finished. So if you've got the potential to wait until the story is finished, because there will be so many loose ends.
Yeah, I mean... With series, I very much prefer to binge read, and I find if I binge read a series and then the last one isn't out yet, by the time that last one comes out, I've fallen out of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have, I used to, so when I was younger, I still am, but a huge fan of Rick Riordan, and he would have a book that came out every year on the 7th of November, that was his release date. He would always, without fail, release a book on that day. I would always have it pre-ordered. I would go to the bookshop on that day to pick up my pre-order. I would start reading it immediately. And then I would finish it 3 days later and cry because I had to wait another year for another one.
Oh.
And I loved it, and I could do that. And then now, I mean, I read all of the Throne of Glass series, but the last one wasn't out yet. I pre-ordered the last one, and then the last one came, and I didn't have a massive urge to read it because even though I want to and I am going to get around to it, it was one of those things. It's like, well, I mean, realistically, it's been long enough that I've come to terms with what happened in the series. I've accepted that they probably all have a happy ending. And for some reason, my adult brain can live with that. Whereas after the cliffhanger on Mark of Athena by Rick Riordan, I had like a full on meltdown because I needed to know what happened.
I remember that. I read all of Rick Riordan over the past 4 to 5 years because, as I said, when I was growing up, the translation industry into German was not up to par with how it was in the original in English. So Rick Riordan and Percy Jackson in general, it was not as big in Germany. No. I asked, like, because I'm part of a book club with two of my friends, and I think the last time on the book club, I asked them whether they know whether this was a big thing. Like Rick Riordan, Percy Jackson, anything.
Yeah.
And it was not. So I thought maybe I had just missed out, but apparently no one knew about it back then.
Yeah.
Or just very few people. And when I read because Rick Riordan is one of those authors, like even as a grown up, because sometimes he's got little Easter eggs where you're like, as a child, you would never understand it. But when you read it as an adult again, it's so nice and easy to read. It's just one of those, like, it's a comfort read, but not that you're like, this is such a lovely-dovey story. Nothing happens that is upsetting me or anything. Like you just said, the cliffhanger at the end of Mark of Athena was heartbreaking, I think, for every reader. But I was so happy that I could just switch to the next book. I don't want to imagine how it was to wait.
I remember when I read House of Hades when it came out. So we were going on a school trip. So I went to pick it up like the day before and I got my copy. and I had it on the bus with me, and the girl who sat next to me didn't have her copy, and she said it was fine, I'd just go ahead and read it. So I was reading it, and then there was the reveal about, I think it's that book, I think the reveal about Nico, and I'm not going to go into more detail about that, but when you find out about Nico, I remember just being like completely shocked and just like frozen on the bus, just because like it was amazing, but I was like, oh my god. And I just couldn't, like, and she was like, what is it? And I'm like, I can't tell you, you haven't read it yet. But no, I have such strong memories of reading Rick Riordan, and he wasn't big when I was younger, necessarily. The films came out and they did quite well over here, which is shocking because I now know that they're not very good adaptions of the book.
They are
fine films if you just watch them and you watch them as a child. The acting is all excellent in it. It's the story that's the problem. I think all of the actors and actresses are wonderfully talented in those films. But yeah, Percy Jackson was kind of what made me love reading. A lot of people, especially here in the UK and around about my age, say that they fell in love with reading because of Harry Potter, because it was around about a similar time. But I hadn't read the Harry Potters, even though I had them, I hadn't read them. And I watched the first Percy Jackson film, and I found out that it was a book because it was on one of the sort of library shelves at my school. So I just picked it up and I read it, and I was like, oh my God, this is so much better than the film. Why did they miss all of these amazing things? It's nothing like the film. This is great. And then I saw on the back that there was 4 more books in the series. So I just immediately went and I saved up all my pocket money and I went to the shop and I bought the full box set and I read all of them constantly, like just all the way, yeah, really quickly. And then my best friend saw that I was doing, she read them all as well. And also a guy in my class had seen them and he also read, he borrowed my books and read them. And yeah, I don't like those covers for the Percy Jackson ones. I don't think the UK covers are very nice. The American covers are the best ones. Because they're Disney covers.
I have to wait. Give me a second. I will have to check on Google. Because actually, for everyone who's living in Germany, we don't have the luxury of having different editions from the books, because there isn't another big country that has German.
Yeah.
Like more. Of course, there's Switzerland where partly they speak German. Of course, there's Austria. But we don't have it like, for example, in the UK or with the US, where you've got like the battle of the covers. If you don't like the cover of the US edition, you just go buy the UK one. And when you read over it, of course, there are differences in spelling and some words might be different. But overall, it's still the same language.
Yeah.
So it's mostly fine, especially when you're a foreigner, you're like, yeah, this, it's English, I can read it. Yeah. So
as an example, yeah, the Lost Hero books are very different, but I have kept those 5 Percy Jackson books are probably the oldest books on my shelves because they're the ones that I read originally, they're the ones that got passed around, and they are very, very precious to me, even if I much prefer some of the new covers that have been released.
So people, this is why I love the comparison of UK to US covers, because literally when I typed in Percy Jackson covers, the first picture that I got, US and UK cover comparison, and they're directly next to each other. It's perfect. So the ones that you mean are the more Disney style, with, for example, with the Battle of the Labyrinth, you've got the red and you actually see the labyrinth.
The more Disney style, because like Disney Hyperion are the ones who publish the books over in America, so, and it's the same with all of the Rick Riordan Presents books as well. They're very similar house style. So I have my Magnus Chase books and my Trials of Apollo books in the American covers, because they just are nicer, and the quality of the hardbacks as well. It's not just a superficial thing. The quality of the hardbacks and the paper, they're just better than the UK ones. The UK ones are a lot larger and clunkier, and I just don't think they're as nice. Generally speaking, I stick to UK covers. I only pay for international shipping for Percy Jackson, for Rick Riordan books. They're the only books that I pay it for, because everything else I'm quite happy with what we get, because I know we're very lucky. But I just, the UK ones, they're usually a bit shinier, and they're kind of a bit more sort of, I suppose, CGI, but it kind of just looks like Photoshop. It's really, I'm sure someone spent a lot of time designing these covers, and they're just not to my liking generally. But I can't really justify having multiple copies of the same series, especially when there's 5 or 6 books in them. So I just have my original Percy Jacksons, because they've got like my terrible children's handwriting in the front, because I used to put my name in the front of my books so that everyone knew they were mine. They're kind of tattered because of how many people have read them and borrowed them and how many times I reread them. But yes, very treasured.
Yeah, those are always the copies that you want to give away, or the ones that you hold very dear because you've just read them so many times.
Yeah.
So you said that, for example, Percy Jackson is like an all-time favorite, and you really, really enjoyed The City of Brass this year. So like the City of Pros probably definitely was one of the big highlights, but did you also have a low light in 2021 already?
I don't necessarily say a low light. So the Bridgerton series was kind of hit or miss with me. There were some of them I really loved because I loved the characters. But I take issue with Julia Quinn, who is the author. I take issue with her views on consent. And I understand that these books were written at the beginning of the 2000s when understanding was maybe slightly differently than what it is now, 20 years later. And equally, if that could be acknowledged in interviews, I would probably be happy with that as an answer. Except all of the, and I may be wrong and I'm open to being corrected, but a lot of what I've read about what she thinks of this content is more she thinks it's okay because it was in Regency era England. And I'm not disputing that maybe consent was really not an issue in Regency era England because, you know, it was the 1800s. But I just think when you're reading, so she's written rom-com style fun romance novels. They are light fun reading that you read on holiday or just to pass the time. They're not serious works of literary fiction that talk satirically about Regency era England in the same way Jane Austen's are. So when something problematic happens in Jane Austen, it's a criticism of the society she lives in. This is written by a 21st century woman looking back, and all she really, because in terms of historical accuracy, I feel like it's mainly set there for the aesthetic. It's not really set there we want to touch but we can't touch. That's really what that's why those books are set there. They're not set there for historical accuracy. So I just think if she's writing something for fun, I just don't necessarily think it's not necessary for her to put some of these things in there. It feels clunky and unnecessary, and I don't think it's very... there are parts where I really don't think it's handled well, and it's quite blunt the way, I suppose, words are used. And I took it... Yeah, so for some of them, it's not even there, and it's not an issue, and you can kind of forget. But every now and then, I would be reading one, and it would just really stand out, and because it's sort of not, it doesn't sort of blend so well, it just really stands out like a sore thumb. And I think one of them in particular was I'm gonna have to apologize to a previous guest on the podcast because I know this is one of her favorite books, but To Sir Philip With Love was probably my least favorite of the entire series. And it wasn't anything to do with even the characters. There's just one specific part of it where the sort of main male protagonist is talking about his late wife, who passed away, but she had sort of mental health issues. And he's talking about some things that went on between the two of them. And from the way it's written and the way he presents it, it's really written as if you're supposed to feel sorry for him. Like he was the victim in that scenario, and he wasn't. And the way I just think it's kind of unforgivable what, even if it was unintentional or even if he didn't mean any violence or malice with his actions, it just made me feel not good and I didn't like it. And I didn't want, so you only ever get one male and one female protagonist that are meant to be together. It's really obvious who they are the entire way through all of the books. So there's no, ooh, will they, won't they? You know they will. They're going to. but after that point, I kind of just remember thinking, but I don't want her to marry you now because I don't like you. Why? No, I think she can do better. I just remember, I found it really hard to root for him after that. And I mean, that kind of romance novel is difficult to enjoy if you don't root for the couple getting together, because you're almost guaranteed to basically be unhappy by the end of it. So yeah, that was probably my low light. It still forms, you know, a part of the series. There are some good moments in there where you get other characters that come in, but yeah, that was probably just the one. The rest of them were all thingy, and there are still parts where I'm a bit like, that's a bit, I feel like we knew that wasn't okay in 2002. But I suppose that's just me, and I think it's a personal quirk of mine that I, one thingy, it's just something that I maybe focus on more than most.
And that's totally fine. I mean, I think every reader has got that one thing that makes their reading style very particular. And this is also something that I really love, and where I try to make the books that I recommend in my podcast as sort of diverse as possible, because everyone has got so many different tastes. And maybe sometimes you don't really know what it is, what makes you not really like a book or a graphic novel, or you can't really pinpoint it. But then maybe when you, I don't know, like a few months later, and you think back on it and you're like, oh yeah, I think that was probably what ticked me off at some point. And then you can learn from that and try to not, or to like move around the books that where you know head on, okay, this will be a topic then that I'm probably not vibing with too much. Like for 2021, I have not had a book that I really did not enjoy in general, because I do so much research in quotation marks on the books beforehand. I usually have pretty good picks of what I like. Of course, sometimes with the writing style there, I will knock down a star or two, but like a really, really low light, I have not had in 2021 yet, book wise. I had a few manga, like, you know, sometimes a manga starts off in a really good point and you really like what's happening, and then 6-7 volumes in, they change something. Maybe the focus is not on the original people and they switch to another group of people. Like you said, it really depends on the people sometimes, the characters that are depicted. And then at some point you just lose interest because you're like, why are we talking about these people? Nobody cares. So this is the only thing that happened to me this year. And what I want to do moving forward in this year is that I want to read Jane Austen for the first time in English, because actually I really wanted to read Jane Austen, but I started her in a time in my life where it just was not in the right mindset. I remember I was on holiday and it was a super hot day. We were on a boat with like several other people and it was so hot. I think it was nearly 40 degrees and we were out on the sea, and I was reading the book, and because it was in English back then, I was not as fluent. I don't know, how old was I? Maybe 15, 16. So my English was not as good as it is now. And so the writing was very hard for me, and it was the like one of those Penguin classic editions, you know, like with the tiny, tiny font.
Oh, and the so very thin pages.
Yeah. You know, like the old one. Like by now, Penguin does wonderful editions with like very high quality paper and everything, and with very nice covers. But back in the day, these were not the days, at least not of the books that I could find in a German bookstore, because that's actually like, there are nice editions, but you don't find them in German bookstores. So I just picked that one and it was so hard to read. And I really remember falling asleep on top of my book because I just like with the heat and everything, it was just too much. And ever since then, I did not, I've been a great fan of the movies that I've seen, and I know that once I read it, I will probably really like the story because I've read some parts of her writing, and I know that her writing style is very, very unique and very true to the era, because it was written in the era, but because her ideas were so modern back then, it's still possible to read them now, like you said before. So making my way slowly through these is what I want to do in 2021 forward. And I'm nearly halfway through, Emma.
I have only read three and a half Jane Austen books, because I could not finish Mansfield Park because I hate the protagonist.
I hear that so much. What's her name? Fanny Price. Yeah.
I am sure she's a wonderful girl who goes through excellent character development. However, I couldn't get... She's very passive, I suppose, which is... There's nothing wrong with that. But when you are accustomed to Emma Woodhouse and Liz Bennett, she just kind of comes off as very weak, I suppose, but not... And she doesn't really fight back for herself, or and things just kind of happen to her. And it's kind of difficult to read when you're strong, used to quite strong-willed female protagonists, especially from Jane Austen novel, because in that kind of world and setting, someone like that, it does just get pushed around quite a lot, and it's not nice to see. I mean, I read Persuasion recently, and Anne Elliot, who's the protagonist in that, is another character. She is more passive. She's not as assertive as Emma Woodhouse or Liz Bennett, but she is very sort of subversive and clever in the way she is. So she doesn't necessarily just let things happen to her. She kind of steers them quietly from her corner, and she has ways of doing it, but she just doesn't let people around her know that that's what she's doing, and it's quite clever. And I did really enjoy Persuasion because I enjoyed the characters in it as well. But I do love Jane Austen. My Jane Austen is at the top, and then I also have a small section of shelf that's dedicated to Jane Austen retellings, because I have quite a few of those. But yeah, I do love Jane Austen. She's wonderful. But her writing style, even when English is your first language, does take a little bit of getting used to, because it's not the same as the way we speak now. And there's a lot of terminology and phrases that we just don't use or use anything like it, so it doesn't make sense. So some of it is very much context clues. So when I first started reading Pride and Prejudice, it didn't make a lot of sense to begin with, but as you sort of immerse yourself in the writing, something clicks, kind of like with Shakespeare. It doesn't make sense, and then it clicks, and then it does, because you've kind of switched codes and you get it. And even if you don't understand something, I mean, the penguin ones are great because they have little exclamations as at the bottom as to what it means, which I do need to use sometimes.
Do you have anything, because for 2021 this is like moving forward, this is one of my projects to slowly make my way through those books, do you have got anything like that, like any books where you're like, yeah, 2021 this is definitely something that I want to do?
Oh, okay. So I'd like to finish a lot of the series that I've started. So I would like to read the second book in the Six of Crows duology. So I want to read Crooked Kingdom. I've been told it's going to make me cry. I
can affirm that, yes.
I am not ready for it. I'm really not, because I know what I want to happen, and if it doesn't, I'm not going to be happy. I would like to finish the Renegade series by Marissa Mayer. I've had the third book for that for ages, and I would like to finish it. I want to finish Trials of Apollo by Rick Riordan, because I've only read the first two, and all five of them are out now, so I've got all three of the last ones, so I can read those. So yeah, I would like to finish a lot of the series, and I know if I don't read Lord of the Rings soon, there are several many diehard Lord of the Rings fans in my acquaintance who will hunt me down. because I've seen the films, I enjoyed the films, I enjoyed The Hobbit when I read The Hobbit, I just haven't been able to get around to Lord of the Rings yet, and I would very much like to. I want to say I'd like to finish Game of Thrones as well, but I feel like that might be going a step too far.
Like, the Game of Thrones train for me has totally left town, like, because it was such a great starting off point for me, but so much has happened since I read them in 2013, so that's nearly 10 years now. One thing that I wanted to ask you, you said before sixth form, I remember learning at some point in school how the English school system works, but I totally forgot. How old is sixth form?
So I would have been 16 going on 17. Sixth form is after secondary school, so it's kind of college. You either go to sixth form or college. They are the same, but people give them different names because sixth form is supposedly, and I'm using inverted commas, more academic, whereas college is sometimes considered more vocational. But realistically, they're the same thing. They just are. The difference is usually sixth forms wear uniforms and colleges let you wear your own clothes. That's probably the difference. but I had also a very long commute to go to that, so that's when I read Game of Thrones. So I read it when I was about 16, which was 2015, yeah, so about 6 years ago. I would like to finish it, but also I've got dream songs, and every time I look at them on my shelf, I go, but am I going to read dream songs, or did I just buy them because the covers match when you put them next to each other and make a bigger picture? Oh, and the Poppy War. I do really need to finish the Poppy War. I read the first Poppy War the year before last. It's amazing. It's an excellent book, but it's also a very traumatic book. And
yeah, I read it too. And I didn't, yeah, it totally I didn't broke research, me.
I didn't research trigger warnings well enough before I read that book. And I mean, I'm sure you're thinking about the same part, but
yes. I'm very sure we do.
middle towards the end, it gave me actual nightmares. Like, it really, really shook me up to the point where it scared me off reading the next two, although I do have them because I do really want to read them. But I mean, I saw someone on Twitter once say that they're never going to read the Poppy, because Poppy War was trending on Twitter, and they said they were never going to read it because they think it trivializes historical events. And I don't like engaging in book debates on Twitter because people get very emotional about them, and I'm not very good with confrontation. It upsets me. So even if it's something really minor, I just don't engage. And I had to forcibly stop myself from saying, I don't really think it trivializes anything. It's actually, if you read the book, you would know there's nothing trivial about what anything that goes on in those books, any of the events. It's terrifying and traumatic and horrible, and actually gave me nightmares. And I don't think you can call that trivial, personally, just for me. But I don't know. I feel like sometimes you can be very informed by the opinions of people. I trust a lot of people on book Twitter and BookTube and that sort of thing. And I will take their opinion at face value sometimes, but I sometimes don't take into account, I suppose, personal biases. So I think it's a good idea to just do general research about whether you should read something. But The Poppy War is such an amazing book. But yeah, I'm going to read them, just because I did actually get a spoiler on Twitter, and I found out that something that I wanted to be true is actually true.
Okay.
So there was something that at the end of book one, the one thing that came out, I was like, oh, I really hope that this happened, but it happened off page and we didn't see it. And it might have. So and that's pretty much my one shining light for reading the rest of the Poppy War trilogy.
And but it's so good that you actually got a good spoiler that makes you want to read the whole series. I can totally understand it with the trigger warnings. Before I read it, I like also on videos, because I got introduced to the book by BookTube. And in the videos, like, they said it depicts war. Yeah, duh. But I had no idea that it was so trigger heavy. And when I read it, up until that point that we probably both think of, I was like, okay, yeah, that's war, yeah. But you know, like, I've read Game of Thrones, I can deal with this. Mm-hmm. And then it got to that point and I'm like, okay, there's horrible stuff happening in Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. But for some reason, this is so much worse.
It feels,
and I think it should have been said that something happens that is very trigger heavy, or if you don't want to, like, put it in the box below, I don't know, like, it's something.
Yeah, it's apparently the book is actually set on, and I mean, my international history is not very good because our history education, much like our language education in the UK, is incredibly biased for some reason. Heaven knows why. But it is actually based on an actual war, and there is an actual event that it's very heavily influenced by it. So I suppose if you're familiar with that history and you're familiar with the fact that it depicts that, you would know that that happens. That being said, it's not events as they happen live. I think what makes it particularly traumatic, although I'm glad that they didn't describe them as they were happening live, because I definitely wouldn't have finished the book. It's because that I think for me what really was upsetting was the really traumatic part for me was described from the point of view of a victim.
Mm.
And because you knew this character before this happened to them, and the kind of, I say, sort of self-possessed person they were, and they were so sort of strong and fearsome, and then you have to, in like, you sit with your point of view and you listen to their trauma story and the things that were done to them and how it's changed them as a person. I think that's the bit that really stuck with me, because you just see, I suppose, you see the transformation. And because it's not, I suppose, Game of Thrones is a little bit detached. I mean, I was the same as you. I read, you know, the I read the violent parts, and even though I, you know, I liked the characters, it just felt so much less personal than, you know, essentially the main characters in the Poppy War are kids, they're teenagers.
Yeah.
Who, you know, they were sort of midway through their training before all of this war broke out, and
yeah,
they weren't ready for it, and no one was ready for it. And it's just really, it's upsetting, I think, for me, for that reason. And I think that's what, oh God. And it's just so,
yeah,
graphic. She's such an amazing writer, just an, such an amazing job of, because it's like you're there, and the imagery she uses is just outstanding, because you know, you can see it, and that makes it worse, because she's done such a good job with her writing that, God, yeah, it's so much worse. It's just so much worse. But I definitely, if you've got a friend you trust who, you know, have read it and they know what you are like personally, mm-hmm, I would probably heavily advise someone do that. And personally, if I'd known somebody who'd read it, I would have maybe wanted them to put little sticky markers at the beginning and,
yeah,
end of those sections. And frankly, I could have skipped that part, probably would have understood the story. I could have just skipped those 5 pages and I probably would have been all right. I would have been like, no, they did a bad thing. The bad guys did a bad thing. That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
Onward.
Oh, yes. So for everyone listening, you know, this is happening when two people who really enjoy reading and apparently have read the same books start talking, because we go on and on and on. I've, yes, been looking at the time and we've been talking for so long, but it was such a great experience to talk with you, Jordan. Before we finish off this episode, do you want to tell the people out there where they can find your podcast?
Definitely. So you can find the Books to Last podcast pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. We are on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. If you go to our social media, so Twitter, Instagram, we are at Books to Last Pod, and you can find all of our links and find your preferred podcast provider there, or just search us in your preferred podcast provider. Yeah, and come and check it out. It's always really fun. It's a lot of talking about all the great books we've read in more detail and in a lot of detail and that sort of thing. And we do try to be spoiler free, but we can't make promises.
Thank you so much for being here. For everyone who that sounds interesting to, check out Jordan's podcast. And until next time, I hope that we discover the words on our shelves and in our hearts. Bye.